Hello and welcome to Over the Counter, a podcast from Drug Topics in partnership with American Associated Pharmacies. We're joined today by Don Arthur, a pharmacist and owner of Black Rock Pharmacy in Buffalo and Brighton Eggert Pharmacy in Tonawanda, New York, to discuss the challenges that lay ahead for creating the next generation of independent pharmacies, how ground advocacy is shaping clinical care delivery, and what he's implementing to create the improved pharmacy of the future.
As we transition into this next phase of the pandemic, what do you think clinical care delivery will look like at independent pharmacies?
Well, I think it's going to take on, you know, many different appearances, but I think point of care testing is the big theme, you know, that I'd like to talk about today. Some of the other clinical services that pharmacies, independent pharmacies, have been providing, medication therapy management, some of the newer programs with diabetes. You know, I think those are, will continue to have opportunities, but I think what's happened to community pharmacies in the last 2.5 years now is how they were able to quickly adapt and become familiar with the various point of care testing that's out in our communities. So I would say, you know, as we transition away from the pandemic, I think antibody testing, you know, still talking about, you know, COVID has some opportunities, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. But I think, you know, some of the lab partners that we had not even known of prior to COVID have approached us now to do finger pricks for vitamin deficiency. So lots of clinical opportunities in the near future.
So do you think that this future will require state or federal legislative changes, or will it be on the ground advocacy work that makes this care a reality?
Well, I wish it were the latter. I wish it was simply advocating for it and it would become a thing, but unfortunately it doesn't work that way in our pharmacy space. So just like we have the federal government involved, obviously, the FDA and others, but we also have states involved, State Board of Pharmacy, State Health Department. So, you know, in community pharmacy, we have to deal with all of those regulatory bodies. But specific to where we are today, emergency orders, you know, really created our opportunities. You know, we began COVID testing in November of 20, 9 months after the pandemic began. It took us that long for our state governor to recognize that independent pharmacies could play a role. And then it took us several months to go through the licensing requirements to become an LSL and receive a CLIA waiver. So I think I'm really hoping, you know, we showed here in Western New York that we have been able to test our community quickly, efficiently, professionally. We've tested over 92,000 people to date. We continue to test much smaller daily numbers, but our vaccinations, we had vaccinated over 15,000 people since the pandemic began. And I think that volume hopefully has shown the regulators, our politicians, you know, that we are absolutely the best place to receive certain types of point of care testing, but it will take permanent, you know, legislative action, both at the state and federal levels, you know, for us to be able to do that.
So what do you foresee as the biggest challenge in creating the next generation of independent pharmacies?
Well, in terms of, you know, my family, you know, my dad started our pharmacies back in 1958, and most independent community pharmacies at that time were single pharmacies, you know, opened by graduates of local pharmacy schools. And the average prescription, I think back then, was under $10. And there were no such thing as PBMs. You know, we actually, if you look at this historically, when we put our typewriters, I began working in 1977 in our family's pharmacies. And in the early 1980s, when pharmacy computers were introduced to independent pharmacy, you know, we took those typewriters that I still remember and put them under the counter, and we began processing prescriptions with our computers. At that time, insurance plans had started to evolve and offer prescription benefits with co-payments for patients. And once we went to computers, we needed a platform similar to MasterCard Visa to just basically handle that transaction for a transactional fee of 25 cents, 30 cents, whatever it was at the time. And they did a phenomenal job at that. But look what they've become. You know, now they're called prescription benefit managers. And unfortunately, even though we were there in the beginning and we helped create that industry, they're probably our biggest challenge, independent community pharmacies. They're our partner, one would think, but the relationships we have with them are very, very difficult. We all have contracts that we sign independently as community pharmacies. But, you know, as I talk to my attorney friends who do contract law, they're always confused by the lack of negotiation in the contracts. So they are contracts, but they don't really feel like contracts because we as independent community pharmacies don't really have any options. And they're unfortunately becoming more and more difficult on a day-to-day basis. You know, I have two community pharmacies in Western New York. One Black Rock Pharmacy opened in 1958. It's a traditional pharmacy like most. Our volume is based on dispensing of tablets and capsules and solutions and liquids. And it's been very challenging to be able to work within this PBM world that's been created. My second pharmacy, Breitinger Pharmacy, is a little bit different. We are a compounding pharmacy. We do non-sterile compounding. And we've been very fortunate in that regard to get a large amount of support from our physician community and our patients. So we've grown that business. We have a large erectile dysfunction business that we created with urologists and throughout our area within a 60-mile radius. So, you know, Breitinger has been able to adapt a little more quickly than our traditional Black Rock pharmacy, but we shouldn't have to. You know, these clinical opportunities, these things that pharmacy does, they should supplement an already vibrant, successful pharmacy. If you've been in your community since 1958, you're filling a large volume of prescriptions, which we are, because the community, we've developed a relationship with the community, sometimes three generations of families, and they respect us, they trust us, and they want to be with us. But a pharmacy like that should be able to compete, to thrive, to be successful in the community on providing those services, those traditional pharmacy services. If they're able to adapt and add staff and expense and create clinical opportunities, that's fine. But they shouldn't have to do that, you know, to keep the lights on. So our biggest challenge is PBMs and, of course, government, you know, working with government. You know, most independent pharmacies tend to be somewhat moderate because we're just trying to find somebody out there on the state level and the federal level to help us.
Okay. And so conversely, what successes have you seen in the industry so far?
Well, you know, if we can get away from, you know, our traditional filling of prescriptions of tablets and capsules and having to interact with PBMs, and I'm always optimistic. I'm hoping that, you know, they do recognize the value we have in our community. Certainly our patients, you know, recognize and respect that. I think the local politicians in our communities do, but we're just not getting that from the PBMs. But I'm hoping that we soon have some successes in that area, both at the state and federal legislative level in our interactions with prescription benefit managers, but in our relationships with our PSAOs, our pharmacy service groups that help us represent us in interacting with PBMs. I hope we, you know, we can come to some kind of an understanding that, you know, independent pharmacies truly do have value. We can help outcomes. We can help reduce healthcare costs. We can help make people healthier. So I'm optimistic in that regard, but it's really the success is, you know, we're not currently involved, but, you know, CPSN, we are involved with CPSN, and CPSN has grown throughout the 50 states, which is great for independent community pharmacy. You know, they get it. Some of their programs we are working with in New York State. There are active programs for diabetes. You had a nice article in your last Drug Topics that talked about HbA1c point of care testing. I'm very interested in doing that. I think that's a big opportunity for independent community pharmacy. Again, you know, we've clearly shown everyone that there are certain healthcare services that are extremely convenient at independent community pharmacies. We showed that Again, I do have two pharmacies. We decided to create a drive-through testing facility at my Brighton Eggert pharmacy. And, you know, to be able to test 92,000 Western New Yorkers and counting and to vaccinate 16,000 people. You say, how did we vaccinate 16,000 people? Well, we didn't do it with our current staff. You know, we were fortunate. We hired, at one point, we had 12 RNs working for us on a full-time basis, and we were vaccinating 150 people a day. So, you know, and I'm not any different than other independent community pharmacies throughout the country. So I think in the last 24 months, we've shown that vaccinations, point of care testing, programs through CPSN and medication therapy management. You know, we've the spotlight has clearly been on us the last 2 years. I think we've performed exceptionally. And I think that's hopefully going to create opportunities for the next several years and into our future.
Okay. So in your current pharmacy practice, what kind of programs and practices are you implementing to help create the improved pharmacy of the future?
Well, I had mentioned our compounding business, and we focus on opportunities in that particular space. We're frustrated. We're fairly new compounders. We aligned ourselves with PCCA, Prescription Compounding Centers of America, and they've been fantastic. You know, my father, we had eight pharmacies, and my father was a former president of NCPA, and my brother Brad. My dad was president in the early 80s, and my brother Brad went through the system, and he was president a few years ago. But my dad and I, so I've been going to NCPA conventions since 1980 when I was in pharmacy school down at the University of Florida. And compounding was there, you know, back in the beginning. And my father and I, we had eight pharmacies. We were big front-end pharmacies at the time. We had gift departments and grocery departments, and we sold beer, and we were part of True Value Hardware. And we said, you know what, that's not us. You know, we're pharmacies. We care for our community back in the pharmacy department, but we're also retailers, and compounding is just not something that we have an expertise in or we're interested. Well, I kept walking by their booth, and 5 years ago, we decided to start a non-sterile compounding business. So we are somewhat new to the industry, but it's really changed our relationship with physicians. We now are problem solvers for our physicians, whether, you know, it's in pain management or orthopedics or podiatry or dermatology. But physicians now call us and ask us to help them solve problems. That's pretty neat. I didn't really experience that prior to getting into compounding. So we'll continue to grow that business. But it's this point of care testing, which is really exciting to me. We learned so much over the past 2.5 years. It's amazing how technology changed from in the beginning of the pandemic. You would have to go to a large lab like Quest Labs in our area, and you know, you would have to pay $225. You would wait upwards of 7 to 14 days to get results on a COVID test. And now we do rapid antigen testing with results in 15 minutes. We do rapid PCR testing with results within an hour. We have a lab partner where we do lab-based PCR with results the following morning. So it's amazing how technology has been so rapidly evolving in that particular space. But with that, we met and created relationships with businesses that I had never even knew existed in our community. And we've been partnering with a local lab that has a national and an international presence. And they just received FDA EUA approval for a COVID antibody test that's simply a finger prick that gives you an analytical numerical value. You know, we've been antibody testing in our pharmacies for the last year and a half with, we've been using the FastStep. And it's a great antibody test, but it's just yes or no. So it doesn't really help the person know what level of antibody protection they have at a given time. This test will give you a number, and that number equates to, they have a what they call the COVID-19 immune index, and the number, it goes from 1 to 20, and it will define if you're at low risk or at high risk. So we're pretty excited. We think we're in weeks of launching that. Again, the company received an FDA EUA for this. where our role will be point of care testing. We will take the finger prick. We will provide the sample into a card, and a courier will pick those samples up later that day. And the patient will have a very, very specific numerical report as to the antibody levels with a very user-friendly explanation. And why is this of value? Probably we're vaccinating about 25 people a day. Most of those people are age 51 and older, receiving their second booster, their fourth shot. And I think the number one question they have, and those under age 50 who are not yet eligible unless they have a underlying condition, but their question is, do I need it? And, you know, as I talk to the lab specialists that we work with that really understand and know this much better than I do, they think it's an excellent question, because it's not beneficial to over-vaccinate someone. So if, and we know that people have different levels of antibody. What we don't know is it's a genetic component, is it a health component? I mean, there's several factors, I'm sure, but they all, you know, go back to the point of, you know, if we have an antibody level that's accurate, you know, we can answer that question. Have an antibody test, and if your levels are low, it would be appropriate to receive another booster. If your antibody levels are high, you have significant protection still, and it's not necessary at the time. So we think we're going to be doing that within the next 2 weeks. We feel it's going to be a covered service under insurance, you know, due to the CARES Act back in 2020. So we're pretty excited about that, because unfortunately, you know, it falls right around the corner, and we don't know if that's what that's going to bring in the world of COVID. But to have a tool like that for people to be able to know their antibody levels and then make a decision based on that as to whether or not to receive another vaccine, I think is exciting.
Okay, so do you have any final thoughts or takeaways that you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just think the final thoughts again are that it's been, you know, March of 20, you know, COVID, it's changed my pharmacy. You know, I don't talk very much about the hand sanitizer, but if you remember in the beginning, Purell wasn't available. And again, you know, the country came to independent community pharmacies, especially those that had some compounding and lab experience, and asked us, provided us with a federal formula, and asked if we could compound basically hand sanitizer. And we made tens of thousands of bottles of hand sanitizer. We were providing it in 5-gallon bottles for companies. So, you know, we did that. We were able to adapt and do that over several weeks. We were able to, as we discussed earlier, gear up and provide a drive-through point-of-care testing for COVID, the nasal swab, as other independents have throughout the country, and do very large numbers, up to 1,500 in one day during one of the holiday outbreaks. So, you know, we were able to adapt to do that. Vaccines we've talked about. You know, we've been vaccinating in New York State for 10-plus years. Unfortunately, the rate of flu vaccines is not as high as we all would like it to be. So we would do 10, 15, 20 a day during the season. We vaccinate for shingles, we vaccinate for pneumonia. We had never thought that our staff expanded with some registered nurses could vaccinate up to 150 people a day. So we've clearly showed our government, you know, that we can do these things. If you remember independent pharmacies throughout the country, it took some of us 3 months to receive our first vaccine. Government felt it was best to handle in clinic settings, which I think, you know, they may or may not have been right. I think those clinics, there was such a demand in the beginning when the vaccination became available, but they could have done better. They could have absolutely opened up those vaccine clinics in communities. I was actually a big part of some of those in our area. But at the same time, they should have gotten those vaccines out to independent pharmacies day one. I mean, we should have been that focal point, and chain pharmacies, because we've been vaccinating the community for the past 12 years. So the rollout was difficult. But once we, if you look now, again, you know, we're still vaccinating 20, 25 people a day. I don't think too many, there aren't any vaccine clinics. They've been gone in Western New York for over 10 months. So, you know, I think government quietly I wish it was publicly said, wow, independent community pharmacies, look what you've done. But I think they absolutely know. We interact every time we order vaccines, which we do weekly. New York State calls us and they're, where are you finding these people? You know, you're, you know, we've got pharmacies that haven't ordered vaccines in months. And, you know, it's, where are these people coming from? And I would say 90% of them are not our current patients. They're people that have heard about what, you know, what we've done in the community in relationship to COVID, and they're driving to us and we're vaccinating them. So I'm excited about our future. I've got two boys, third generation, working in our two community pharmacies. So I'm excited for them. And I don't ignore the challenges we have with prescription benefit managers, but look what's happening around the country. All 50 states seem to be taking a much harder look. The FTC decided to just take a look. So I bounced around quite a bit today, as I do, but I do think there's lots of opportunities in the future.
Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next time at the counter.